The book is called Constitution Making and Reform: Options for the Process. Its authors say the process for designing and implementing a constitution is important. It's instrumental in rebuilding or strengthening states and political systems and securing a durable peace. For that reason, they say the guide pays particular attention to the special needs of constitution making in divided societies. It also focuses on ways to make sure the process is inclusive, transparent, participatory, and nationally owned and led. The guide draws from the decades of experience of the authors, as well as dialogue with dozens of practitioners in global workshops, to discuss what has worked, where, and why. Scott Weber is the Director General of Interpeace, a Geneva-based international organization that helps societies afflicted by war to build a durable peace. He says the handbook is not meant as a one-size-fits-all recipe for every country. Constitution makers are invited to use those parts of the guide that work best based on the historical, cultural, and political context of a given country.
And that's why the handbook is so important. It's not a cookbook. It doesn't say you start with this and then you end up with this and then you... It is a guide that helps the practitioners in a society to make choices along the way, and it doesn't dictate which ones are right or wrong. It helps them to make choices when there are many options available to them, and helps them to see the pros and cons of each.
The handbook, which is also available online on Interpeace's website, is divided into four parts, including an overview of the roles played by constitutions and of the challenges involved in creating them in conflict situations. The opening chapters look at some of the tasks that are part of the constitution-making process and the institutions and procedures often used to achieve them. Among the tasks are establishing timetables, creating interim constitutional arrangements, and conducting public education and consultations. Other parts of the book look at the various institutions that can play a role in establishing rules, determining topics for consideration, and drafting a constitution. The final section provides guidance for civil society, media, and other external parties involved in constitution making. Weber says the handbook includes several lessons learned from decades of experience. One of them includes ownership of the constitution-making process. He says priorities must be determined locally and determined by dialogue that will lead to a document based on consensus.
These processes should not be designed from the outside. Too often, when you have a large international involvement, there's a sense that part of the process to bring closure to a conflict is then going to be the drafting of a constitution. And there's no more sovereign act for a society than to draft their own constitution. And when you have too much of an international presence in a society, it tends to influence the process too much.
Michelle Brandt is a constitutional lawyer with experience in constitution making in several countries, including Afghanistan, East Timor, and Cambodia. She's currently advising on several Arab Spring countries and is one of the authors of the handbook.
The international community should respect that constitution making is a sovereign process and is deeply political. This is not to say that there is no role for the international community. At times, international actors play a key role in brokering a peace agreement. When the international community is involved in advising on peace agreements, it needs to ensure that it does not repeat some of the common mistakes from the past. For example, suggesting that the process adopt a constitution within a 90-day time frame. The legal framework for the processes in Cambodia and East Timor only provided for 90 days to draft and adopt a constitution. That's not enough time to educate the public, build trust between the key actors, and consult on either before they draft the constitution or after they draft the constitution. This is contrasted with the processes of truly nationally owned and led processes, such as South Africa, which took many, many years. Short time frames for these processes prevent a participatory process because there's not sufficient time to promote dialogue and also build consensus. This precludes the ability of the process to serve as a peace-building and conflict resolution tool. When it is requested to do so, the international community should share comparative examples and not simply advocate for a constitutional model used in its own country.
Weber warns against a rushed process, whether the timetables are set by foreign partners or by domestic actors.
You know, we have situations like in Egypt right now where the authorities are trying to rush the process far too quickly. And the result of that is going to be a constitution that might get adopted in a national referendum, but which is always going to have a contested legitimacy.
Scott Weber says another lesson taken from the experience of constitution builders is the importance of including a broad section of society in the process, including in the makeup of the Constitutional Assembly. Weber says Interpeace suggests including in assemblies or other negotiating bodies as many stakeholders as possible. Sometimes that may mean including warlords or politicians tied to the existing order.
It represents generally a certain power structure, certain levels of interest, vested interests, and they can often spoil a process if they feel that it's running away with itself. So I think the best way, and this is not just in constitution-making processes, this is how we also deal with spoilers in a peace process, in a peace-building process, is to include them in and then to include everyone else at the same time. What that does is it dilutes their influence. It makes sure that they can't say that they were left out. It does integrate the good ideas that they may have, because often that elite also has a technocratic experience, which is going to be important to take into consideration. And so you involve them, but by involving a much wider cross-section of society, you dilute that influence as well. So you get the best of both worlds.
However, handbook author Michelle Brandt says it's not always possible or even desirable to have elements of a discredited regime in negotiations.
The goal of a constitution-making process is to end up with a legitimate constitution. If the inclusion of a discredited regime would discredit the process, the old elite may be excluded. However, the goal is to have all key stakeholders around the constitution-making table. It may not be possible to include all groups at the start of a process. However, the goal is to make the process as inclusive as possible in divided societies and to build in enough time for key actors or communities who've been in conflict to gain more trust as they continue to go through the transition process. And then as you make the process inclusive, you build in more participation as the process continues.
Building trust must not only be between the constitution makers, but also among the broader society. In a divided society, public participation can bring a break with the past, where voices were once suppressed at the point of a gun. When possible, the handbook recommends a public awareness campaign, including public information and civic education.
But you need to have a public awareness campaign. People need to understand what is at stake, what are the options. They need to be able to formulate those options. And then how those messages get transmitted upstream back to the experts and back to the Constitutional Commission and eventually the Constituent Assembly is where often you have a contested process. And so it's very important for there to be feedback loops built into the system so that people feel that what they are contributing is being heard. Because if you have that, then at least if their ideas or options are not adopted, that's okay. They'll accept that. But if it goes into a black hole, and then what emerges at the end of the process is so vastly different from the subjects discussed with them, then you have a problem.
Many countries offer the public a chance to show their support or disapproval of the proposed constitution through a referendum at the end of the process. Brandt says the handbook includes the benefits and drawbacks of such a vote. It also includes ways to improve referenda. One suggestion encourages having the public participate in the early stages of the constitution-making process. This way, people become aware of the issues and the debates, and they're able to make an informed choice at the referendum. Another suggestion includes a code of conduct that prohibits political parties from hate speech and the deliberate misleading of voters about the draft.
What the handbook says about referendums is that a referendum in a divided society can often undo the careful compromises that have been taking place through representative process. That's because the Constitution can become about one issue. Like in Kenya, abortion became a big issue in the referendum. And spoilers can come in and manipulate the voters about what the key issues are in the Constitution. The handbook stresses that if the process is representative, inclusive, and participatory, a referendum is not necessary for that final constitution to be considered legitimate.
Weber says one lesson that Interpeace has learned is the occasional confusion between peacemaking and the process of creating a new constitution.
The issues that need to be negotiated and resolved in a peace process are ones that are quite different from the issues that need to form the basis of a national dialogue on the future of the country, and ultimately into a constitution that might emerge after conflict.
Others say constitutional-making issues, if central to the resolution of a conflict, must be addressed in the peace agreement. The handbook does note that there are other options aside from adopting a finalized constitution. Instead, parties may wish to adopt an interim one. The guide notes that it's important that an agreement on a ceasefire during conflict be concluded quickly. But it says a long-term settlement, often seen as including a new constitution dealing with the underlying causes of conflict, usually needs more time. The book says it may be premature to start negotiations on a new political order when many issues normally dealt with in a peace agreement have not been resolved, including disarmament, integration of armies, and resettlement of the displaced. The handbook says it may be necessary to delay creating a constitution until the opposing parties have an interim period in which they can build trust. A transitional document may be needed to provide the legal framework for running the country. During this time, former enemies may decide to share state power and conclude the peace process. In that case, a final constitution would come later. I'm William Eagle in Washington.